I spent about 20 minutes in my car listening to Dolly Parton songs and crying today. I am still a little shocked how emotional I am about the news that Dolly Parton is gone. It's Drive Time. I'm Jason. Dan is here. Susie keeping us up to date on the news, and we're sort of going through it together. I think there's a generational aspect here where if you're like me and you grew up in a household in the 80s and your mom or maybe your grandma, and it's, I mean, not to gender this, but it's moms and grandmas that were listening to Dolly Parton in the 80s. And in a time where celebrities just let you down one after the next, you love their music, you love their artistry, and they become a monster one way or another. Dolly Parton got better with time. There was something about her music, about her life, about her attitude, about her humor that made you think, this is the American dream. This is the America you want. That when you hit it big, you're going to take care of your family, you're going to take care of your community, and you're never going to forget about where you came from. There was something in Dolly that I think represented the best of us. I don't know. That's the best way I can make sense of this, because I am never impacted by celebrity deaths. And that's why I thought we should start here today. I welcome you into the conversation, share your memories, explain what you're going through, because I'm still kind of trying to make sense of it. At 651-461-9226. I wanted to bring in a country radio Hall of Famer. Marcy Braun is with us. Marcy runs The Wolf 102.9 right here in the Twin Cities, and she runs a legendary country radio station in Chicago, US 99. Marcy, are you going through some of these same emotions that I've been talking about here? Oh, I think your microphone's muted there, Marcy. There we go. Now we got you, I think. No, still no? Let's see. Marcy? No, we don't got you. Why don't we give Marcy a phone call? You know, sometimes we try to do this fancy on the video chat. You know, Marcy's a big shot for this company. Maybe you can get the technology fixed for us here. That's what I got to say. Look what just, oh, I hear you now.
Oh, great. I did. It was probably me.
I don't want to blame a radio executive for not knowing how to operate a microphone, but that does seem.
You should.
Yeah.
You 100% should.
Marcy, I mean, I was sitting in the car listening to Dolly Parton's nephew share his story, and we'll play that in a minute. But this, I was surprised how overcome I was by this news today.
I mean, I feel that Dolly is immortal. I mean, I know that she's been hinting lately about some health issues, but yet she's always been present when she's done that. She's always done the videos and we've always seen her and she's always, you know, had a smile on her face. And so I think that there's just part of me that thought this day would never, ever come.
When you think about country music and Dolly Parton's importance, for me, I've been struck by in the modern era how much she's been a mentor for, you know, you look at Miley Cyrus, who was her goddaughter. But you think about generations of country women in a genre that for a long time it has been the country dudes, the big swagger, big cowboy hat. And here comes Dolly with her own approach.
She's the gold standard. Let's look at everything that Dolly's done. I mean, not only an amazing singer-songwriter with 25 number ones to her name, but also she's an amazing actress. She's an amazing philanthropist. I mean, just look at what she's done. I mean, she donated all that money during COVID for COVID vaccines. She's donated millions of dollars for cancer research. This woman not only came into this world being the angel that she was a real life angel on life, but she wanted to leave this world better than she found it. And the connection she has with not only the country audience, but just the global audience. I mean, I dare you to find someone that didn't love Dolly Parton with right. all their heart.
Yeah, I mean, the New York Times wrote that story, and I think it was 2019, where it was talking about a divided America. And it said, is there anything we can agree on? Oh, yes, it's Dolly Parton. It is the
one,
right? I mean, there is some truth to that. To me, I remember, you know, and I think back in the 80s, she was really becoming a TV star as well. And she had her own variety show. I just remember her with the Muppets over and over again in my childhood. And there was something about that self-deprecating humor. Today, you look at the way that celebrities use social media to try to bring you inside their world. I feel like Dolly was 30 years ahead of her time in letting us in. You know, we knew her nails were fake. We knew her boobs were fake. We knew she wasn't blonde.
She was 100% in on the joke. You know, people asking her, you know, oh my God, Dolly, your hair's so great. How long does it take to get your hair looking like that? I don't know. I'm never there when it's done, was her answer. I mean, it was, you know, it was perfection. She was the master of just leading the way in everything, including being inside the joke before everybody else could, you know, say it to her.
Marcy Braun is with us. She's a country music, a radio executive. Runs our station here in Minneapolis, The Wolf. You know, you look at 11 Grammy Awards, 54 nominations, 10 Country Music Association Awards. But it only tells part of the story. You touched on the fact that, you know, she donated $1 million that went to Vanderbilt for the development of the COVID vaccine. Over the years, I believe it's upwards of 300 million, 350 million books that have
Dolly's library, yeah, the library.
The library. Yeah, just sort of, it is a time, and we're going to hear for sure from music royalty, and the president posted about it a couple of minutes ago. But I think your point that we thought she was going to be immortal, and also I'm 51 years old. I think if you are 40 to 60, you're in that wheelhouse where you probably were caught off guard by this just like I was today.
Absolutely. I was on the phone with a friend of mine. She was calling to check up about something. And I got a text message from one of our general sales managers that said, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I know how much you loved her. And I was like, wait, what? Like, I don't know what he's talking about. Like, I thought maybe the text went, you know, because he didn't reference Dolly. Mm-hmm. And then from that moment, Jason, it was a flood and it hasn't stopped.
You've met her, Marcy?
I met her once. She was playing at the Chicago Theater, and she came into the station, and it was an early morning show visit. And so she came up through the freight elevator, and I held the studio door for her as she was leaving. And she put her hand on my cheek. And I promise you, this has never happened in my entire life. When she did that, my right knee completely gave out. Like it, I swear it was the most amazing and surreal thing. I mean, legitimately touched by it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was just so special, and she was so kind. And I mean, everybody who she had surrounding her, you know, in her management and at her record labels and stuff like that, they all were just as wonderful as her. And it was a group of just, you know, a wonderfully moving piece of humanity, if you will.
Marcy Braun. From US 99 in Chicago and The Wolf right here in the Twin Cities. Your favorite Dolly song is?
My favorite Dolly song is, it's tough, but it's Here You Come Again. I don't know. I just... I know. There's just something about that song. I mean, you know, everybody, you know, you think, oh, Jolene, I Will Always Love You, 9 to 5.
But great,
just something about Here You Come Again. Like, you know what? I've had it with, and this is what she does. there's every song will reach a person for another reason, but this is like the strong Dolly, like, oh, ha, 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 you thought you could come back again? Nope. See you later. Bye.
Well, I know people are going to get a lot of joy tonight kind of playing those songs and taking us back in time. But these songs are shockingly timeless, too. The messages resonate mm-hmm. today, maybe more than in the 70s and the 80s. In the 90s when they were first coming out. Yeah. Marcy Braun, thanks for spending some time with us and sharing those
memories. Absolutely. Thanks so much.
651-461-9226. Your favorite song. There is something about the memory that takes you back to a time with your family, right? And that's what I was touched by when I was thinking about this today. I do think there's something to the fact that you have somebody who has married the same guy for almost 60 years. He died last year. She dies this year. No real scandal with Dolly Parton that anybody knows of. It's so different from what celebrity is like today. Share your memories. Share your favorite songs. We'll play these songs throughout the show today. Dolly Parton, leaving us in one sense, but she'll be a part of our lives forever. 651-461-9226. Drive Time back in a minute. Oh, the news really hit hard that Dolly Parton died today. The last we really heard from her was in a social media post where she was saying that sort of like her, you know, her intestines and her digestive system, everything was all sort of mixed up and that she was going to be okay. But that was months ago. And she, the news out today that Dolly Parton died at the age of 80. The president of the United States did post on Truth Social that he is going to lower the American flag for a week, starting tonight at 6 p.m. So flags will be at half mast or half staff.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to call it. For Dolly Parton.
That's appropriate.
I think so, too.
She's a cultural icon. I think that's perfectly appropriate.
I think so, too. And there is, in part, Dan, I think why I'm interested in talking about this more than I think I would a typical sort of cultural icon or American celebrity is the fact that we kind of need this. We kind of need this where you have people all around the spectrum that are feeling this same way. And I do think there is some benefit in having when you can have a common conversation about something. And for me, like the curiosity came from really understanding why. I mean, I was literally bawling in the car. Listening to her nephew, and we'll play that sound in a minute, but that post when he announced her death was just, it just hit me, man. It really did.
Well, and that was, you know, my surprise today, because and you mentioned this when you were talking to Chad, that, you know, I'll send you an email every morning with potential topics, and if there's a celebrity death of some sort, I usually include that in there, and you're usually very not interested in those sorts of things. So when I got the text from you, that's how I found out. You sent me a text saying all Dolly bumpers today as I was driving into work. And I had to then, when I got here and got parked and was safely able to access my phone,
right,
Google, hey, did Dolly Parton just die? Right, and clearly right. That's what had happened, right?
Right.
So that it impacts you this way, of all people, tells me what kind of cultural impact
right.
she's had, right? Because it doesn't affect me the same way. I didn't grow up listening to, I mean, I'm aware of her. She's, I mean, yep. Again, I appreciate her for all the reasons everybody says.
For sure.
It just wasn't a huge part of my life. So it's not like I'm reacting that way. And yet you see so many people having such an emotional reaction to her.
Yeah.
Her passing that, it just, again, it tells you, we talked about this, was it last week or the week before, about what kind of legacy you want to leave. Mm. And I mentioned specifically about, you know, the people whose lives I'd like to have touched, and it isn't about putting names
right.
or
your
having
name on a building
or thing park or whatever yeah. like that. But the amount of people whose lives she touched, if you listen to Marcy's story in that first segment, that's it. And she probably did something like that millions, literally millions of times in her life. Mm-hmm. And to Dolly, it was just an everyday occurrence. And yet to this person, it was everything in this huge memory. That tells you about the quality of a person more than anything they have their name on.
And a texter says, Jason, I feel nothing regarding Dolly. I think it's because she was 80. It was her time. To me, it's different when they're younger, like Prince or Michael or Whitney. And I think that's a totally reasonable reaction, right? For sure. Like, 80 is a good run, right? You don't look... It is never great when someone you care about dies, but I do think if you want to, you know, if you want to rank what's worse, like, yeah, it's worse when you feel like you were robbed of time with someone.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly amplifies things.
It amplifies.
But I don't care if you're 180 when somebody who's brought as much light into the world as she did passes.
Yeah.
That's something that's going to affect a lot of people, and appropriately so.
Let's play that little sound from her nephew right now. This is Brian Seaver. And, you know, the official news came out at the same time, a news release from Dolly Parton's PR team at like 1:30 or something like that, and this post on social media at the same time. But, Dan, what you just said about the way you want to be remembered, that's what really hit me listening to her nephew.
Hey, everyone. My name is Brian Seaver, son of Cassie Parton, and I'm representing the Parton and Owens family today, announcing the passing of my Aunt Dolly Rebecca Parton Dean, sister, sis, Aunt Granny to one generation and Gigi to the next. This video announcement is something Dolly asked of me years ago, before I fully absorbed it as a future reality. As her head of security for more than two decades, a role my father Larry held before me, I have imagined the heaviness of this moment, but haven't truly felt it until now. It is an honor that is mixed with absolute pride and great sadness. But sadness lies with us, not with Dolly. Dolly has lived in the light and is in the arms of Jesus, surely met by Carl, her parents, and countless others who have watched her and longed for her to meet them in the heavens. I first went on the road with Dolly as a kid, getting a taste of the road life in the early 1980s. Dolly opened doors not just for me, but for her entire family to reach the potential we didn't even know was possible. Dolly also opened doors for generations of singers, songwriters, musicians, and dreamers from every walk of life and across every continent. By her example, we believed that anything was possible. She never saw a door she couldn't open, and the doors she opened made and changed history. My family and I have shared a lifetime of beautiful memories with Dolly, but so have you. She has always been on your television, your record player, your CD, and on your phone playlist, becoming an extended part of your family, whether you liked it or not. Our family and the team she has entrusted with her legacy will work diligently to ensure her spirit will live with us forever. Dolly was a farmer, just like her daddy. He farmed the soil, she farmed songs and happiness. Dolly called me and said she wants to rest in a beautiful bed of plush cotton because after a life wearing heavy rhinestones, she finally deserves to be comfortable and have some rest. Rest in peace, Aunt Dolly, Aunt Granny, Gigi. May God bless Dolly Parton, and may God bless you all. She will always love you.
Ugh, that last part just gets you. She will always love you. Your favorite songs coming in like crazy and lots of memories. Jason Dolly's book program put a children's book into my nephew's hands every month from age 1 to 5 and was instrumental in helping him learn to read. Another texter, I'm crying now. Dolly was an ultimate legend. It's, I don't know, I think there is value to taking these moments where we collectively feel this. In a time where I feel like we live in our own little silo, we have our favorite music, our favorite artist, our favorite podcast, our favorite talk shows, whatever. Don't we lose something with that approach to life? Can there be a character? Can there be a cultural phenomenon that crosses the lines? Like Dolly did? I don't know. I don't know that our society can have that anymore. And I mourn that, too. I think that's part of the sadness, that this sort of universal appeal, based on talent, yes, but also based on just this humanity and this love for neighbor. It's a very Christian, religious underpinning to her life. I think we forget that. So I mourn that too. We'll play Dolly Parton songs throughout the show today, for sure. We're going to break in a minute. I think the best thing, whenever you lose someone, is figure out, all right, how do we pick up and do good going forward? Make the world better. And I got an idea for you coming up in just a minute. It involves giving blood and a little bit of friendly competition, too. We'll talk about that in just a minute here on Drive Time. So many texts from fans of this song. This is my number one. This is my number one. Islands of the Stream, that incredible duet with Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton. I think we listened to that song growing up. There is a night a couple of years ago where all of my siblings, my three siblings and I, were sitting around the table with my mom and dad, and running through the songs that we associate with our childhood, the songs that we remember listening to. And we called them up on Spotify and then sang along. It's pretty good. That was it for us as well. 3:39, let's talk about a way you can make an impact in the community. You may have heard about the crisis level blood centers are at all around America, including here in the Twin Cities. And I like a little competition, and I'm a homer. So if there is a way that, as a Minnesotan, we can stick it to the Wisconsin Badgers, I am intrigued. Dan Cook, as a Wisconsin Badger alum, would love nothing more than to see his Badgers win this blood competition, which they've won before, Dan Cook. The Gophers have never won, but I think this is our year. Cole Heath is with us via video link up. You can watch this on the YouTube channel, WCCO Radio, on our Facebook page. We're streaming on my X account as well. Cole is with Abbott and has another year of this competition. Hey, Cole.
Hey, Jason. Thanks for having me. Yes, the competition and the competitive juices, they are flowing for year three of the We Give Blood Drive, and we're excited for this opportunity. Like you said, it's a nationwide competition, coast to coast between all of the Big Ten schools. And we're hoping that the Gophers can take home the title this year and help people save lives and help the University of Minnesota win a $1 million grant from Abbott for student and community health.
So this thing is officially getting underway in a couple of days, but you can give blood tonight, you can give blood tomorrow, and it counts. Explain how this works, because you guys try to keep track of this, right?
Yes, we do, and everyone gets to play a part in this story when they give. So people, if they're driving home or are listening at home right now and are wanting to get back to the community and help support the Gophers as well, they can go to their local blood center. If there's a blood drive around the corner, they can go to do that too. They just need to remember that the official competition starts tomorrow. But if you want to give now, you just need to go give blood.
But no one's going to go just like give blood in 10 minutes, right? You can go tomorrow.
Let's start stacking the deck here for the Gophers.
It's all right. You can wait till tomorrow. But like these are, I know, like right in the metro area. It doesn't matter where you give.
No, it doesn't matter where you give. Go to any blood center or blood drive nationwide. But just be sure to go to big10.org/Abbott. After you give, to log proof of your donation, and that's when it officially goes on the scoreboard for the Big Ten school of your choice, hopefully the University of Minnesota, and then those donations.
Wait a minute! So you could be a Minnesotan, you could be like a Dan Cook, and you could go to your blood center and you could give for the Badgers,
or you can be an Arizona State Sun Devil like myself and still give for the Badgers. It's a two-way street. Sorry, Dan.
Oh, I like that. But you better give for the Gophers. What are you doing giving for the Badgers? We don't want that, Cole.
No. I'm saying everyone should be giving for the Gophers.
That's
because,
right, exactly.
You know what? It's our year. And the Badgers, they won last year. Nebraska the year before that. I mean, let's get it going. The Twin Cities, they are a great community. statewide, and we can help save lives because the need for blood is constant. Every 2 seconds, someone needs a blood donation in this country, and people can give back, not only help save lives, but they can also help with the school of their choice, hopefully the University of Minnesota. And as a thank you, while supplies last, if you are able to submit proof of your donation online, not only does that go on the scoreboard for the University of Minnesota, you also get a really cool t-shirt while supplies last as well.
All right. So when you kind of share your proof, how is that, like, do they give you a receipt or something, or how do you prove it?
So when you go to Big Ten.org/Abbott, all the information is there. Blood centers coming up, blood drives coming up. And then once you submit proof of donation on that website as well, then it starts walking you through those steps of what you need to submit proof.
Got it. All right. Very good. So a texter is asking if pot smokers can give blood. I think that was nice of your wife to text in with that question. But what's the rule on that? Do you know?
Well, everyone should consult their local blood center. Unfortunately, I don't have a degree in that field.
Right? This is not your area of expertise.
I'm just here to get people to vote for the Gophers. But if they go and they want to give, thank you for asking how they can give. But just consult with a professional.
On the website, it says you have to abstain from injection drug use for at least 3 months before donating. But yes, ask at your blood center. Very specific questions. I mean, why?
you know what? We appreciate the participation.
They want to help. They want to help.
Yeah.
It's very good. Look, over the years, this idea, and there is something, especially young people, like trying to teach them, giving blood becomes a tradition. And I think there's real value in getting, especially the college students, but a lot of people out there. You know, Cole, I didn't give blood for the first time, I think, until I was in my 40s. And I was just nervous about it. The needle, and I don't know. And I went and did it, and it was great. It was easy. It was no big deal. But, you know, this idea of having the competitive part of this to build a culture of donating blood and being generous in this area, I think makes a ton of sense.
It really does. And I think a lot of people out there share that fear of the needle. I was one of them too. I've now given multiple times over the course of the last couple of years of We Give Blood. And once you get in the chair, everyone's different, of course, but speaking from my own experience, once the needle is in, it's kind of easy peasy. And the staff who work the blood drives and blood centers, they're great to make sure you're comfortable as well.
All right. Pretty cool. Just go to Big Ten.org/Abbott/Minnesota or just /Abbott. That gets you to the thing. Almost 250,000 lives saved through donations through the Big Ten schools over the years. Kind of fun as we get ready for football to get going, get that competition, get those juices flowing. Let's get another kind of juice flowing as well. Get that blood going.
Let's do it.
And the winning school gets $1 million, right?
$1 million for student and community health. How cool is that?
Did we bury the lead a little bit? $1 million.
Wisconsin won last year, Nebraska the year before that. It's the Gophers' time. So we appreciate everyone getting out there and helping save lives.
Pretty cool. All right. Thought that'd be a good message to get out today. Cole Heath from Abbott, we appreciate it. Thanks, Cole. It's 3:46.
Thanks, Jason.
Big Ten Blood Drive starts officially tomorrow. Good stuff. In a minute. A story in the New York Times today that made me feel about 172 years old. Dating terms that you need to know. And also, is the New York Times just making stuff up now to fill their website? We'll talk about it in just a minute on CCO. If there's one Dolly Parton song that I think you guys should listen to tonight, it's this one. Because this became a children's book. This story is vintage Dolly. Real talk, rags to riches, humanity, love, differences between people, all welcomed and celebrated out of love for your neighbor. Great song. That wasn't helping when I was trying to stop crying in the car today with that news that Dolly Parton has died at the age of 80. Dan, we have a little breaking Minnesota Vikings news. Lay it on me.
Yeah, the NFL has decided that Jashaun Jones of the Minnesota Vikings is suspended for the club's first three regular season games without pay for violating the NFL's substances of abuse policy.
Mm.
So,
how, I mean, classic, right? If you don't have a Minnesota Vikings player getting suspended for some sort of screw-up.
Somebody's in trouble for something. We thought that the big Vikings trouble was going to be the connection to the Diana Rossini story.
Right.
In the offseason, but no, it's going to be this.
All right. We don't really know. We don't know exactly what he did, right?
Nope.
At this point, we didn't know if he was going to make the cut anyway down to the final 53.
I think this might factor into that a little bit.
Yeah. Not looking great. He'll be able to play in the preseason finale before the suspension takes effect. Wouldn't that be the move? Like, make him play and then be like, see you later.
Yeah.
Yeah,
by the way,
yeah,
after the final whistle, see the coach in the office with their playbook, please.
Twins Ticket Tuesday, in effect today, as it is every Tuesday here on CCO Radio. So we are giving away tickets. I have no idea what we're giving these tickets away for.
We're giving away a four-pack of tickets
the White Sox?
For this Saturday. That's right, against the White Sox. It's a crucial division series, Saturday afternoon. It's an afternoon game.
I was going to go Friday. I was thinking of going after the fair Friday night.
Any of these games would be great.
Fireworks, I think, Friday
Sure.
night.
First 10,000 fans on Saturday receive an Unreal Twins cap.
Oh, that's a sick hat, too. Yep. You know I love Unreal, the Minnesota. It's that UNRL, that Minnesota company. Cool stuff. First 10,000. Do you ever want to give away bad enough to be in line that early, though?
Well, no, being as media members, I just go to the press box and they just give you one. So
do they just give you one there?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Huh. Must be nice.
No, it's not bad.
Be one of the chosen people you get.
Well, don't call now. Don't call now.
When you hear the thing.
When you hear the Wind Twin sounder.
We thank.
Caller number three gets those tickets. And yes, we thank Luther Kia of Bloomington for coming through on Twins Ticket Tuesday.
Very nice. New York Times today had a story about dating terms, and they had a quiz. And I love a quiz. You give me an interactive quiz. So I'm looking at this thing and going through it with Seth, the 21-year-old, because, like, I don't know what's up, you know? Are you fluent in the latest dating lingo, says the headline. Dan, did you take this quiz, or did you just send me this article?
I sent it to you because I knew you'd enjoy it.
Do you consider yourself fluent in the latest dating lingo?
I definitely do not.
Do you know what ghosting is?
Yes.
What is it called when the person who ghosted you suddenly reaches out and acts like nothing happened? There's a term for that. It is...
Zombieing?
Zombieing. That is the only thing worse than a ghost in dating. All right. Fine. Do you know what an orange flag is? Like, I know what a red flag is.
Right, so you'd assume that an orange flag just is something not quite as bad as a red flag.
What about a beige flag or a pink flag?
I don't know, it seems like a lot of colors to keep track of.
Why do we need so many flags? Why do people have to make dating so complicated? Why do we need a term for everything? We need a flag for this, a term for that. We got fubbing, we got zombieing, we've got catfishing, we got wildflowering, we got DTR. There's orbiting, there's cushioning, there's cookie jarring, there's breadcrumbing, kitten fishing, catfishing, chat fishing, goblin intimacy. Someone in search of chalance? There's pocketing, there's shrekking, there's loyal maxing?
Seems like a lot.
If my wife ever leaves me, I'm staying just absolutely celibate and solitary for the rest of my life. You guys have ruined dating with all your damn words. Continental Diamond says, just give a diamond ring and shut up with all the terms. Well, Target sure stepped in it, didn't it? And I'm not talking about the boycott that you just heard in the news from Susie. We talked about that yesterday. And let me tell you, Target, I'm sick and tired of defending you and then to have some news story come up 2 seconds later that makes me look like a ding-dong. It's drive time. Welcome in. Sharing your Dolly Parton memories, your thoughts, your reflections throughout the show and playing some of her most impactful songs. We'll do that throughout the next couple of hours. So keep that coming at 651-461-9226. You can send us a voice message, too, if you want to share what Dolly Parton meant to you. You can use that on the Odyssey app right next to where you listen live. Send us a message. I'd like to send Target a message. Get your crap together. What is happening over there that they continue to step in it time and time again? The question I think it is reasonable to wrestle with is the allegation that our friend, our colleague, Shaletta Brundage, has made here, has made on local television, has made on national news. I saw her quoted in a Sophie Flay story on ABC News. Is Target racist? Shaletta came out saying Target is racist. I think that is ridiculous. But I do think they have major problems. And this costume being pulled from the shelves, to me, the questions are more about who's in the room? Who's in the room when products are being approved? When, because you know, if Dan Cook had like Dan Cook's ketchup and Dan was trying to get Dan Cook's ketchup on the shelves of Target, you would have to go through dozens of meetings with Muckety Mucks to make sure, well, this packaging has to be right, and the price has to be right, and the copy has to be right, and the messaging has to be right. So if you missed the latest outrage against Target, the costume, it's a weird one, okay? And now I know, like, here come people saying, well, who wants whatever white Jason DeRusha thinks about this? And what I would say to that is get out of here with that stupidity. No. Anybody can have an opinion on this stuff. Nobody gets more like, oh, you get more street cred in this area. Target admitted that they screwed up. But to me, that doesn't really answer the structural question as to what is going on over there. Target, in a statement with this costume, said, we got this wrong. As a company, we know we got this wrong, and we are deeply sorry. The costume is offensive and should never have been part of our assortment. Let me describe the costume. Because I don't know that the costume itself is, to me, offensive. The costume was listed as the Kids Glows under Blacklight Circus Clown Halloween Costume Bodysuit. It was from a Target-owned brand, so it came in-house. It was done in-house. The costume is orange and black. It's like leggings, an oversized, I don't know, it's sort of like, would you describe that, Dan, as like a Charlie Brown style?
Yeah, that zigzag pattern.
The zigzag pattern.
Yeah.
And a little top hat. And in the hood that you put on over the top, there's like a smile, a big oversized smile. Now, when you look at this image, the promotional image for this, it's a black child wearing the costume. So I have a lot of questions about this that we'll never get an answer to, right? Because Target's never, what? How can they defend themselves and win in this case? They can't. To me, if there was a photo shoot here, with a black kid doing like a minstrel show kind of cha-cha little expression, How did no one in the room say, like, nah, I don't know about that. What if we put that costume on a white kid? If the costume's on a white kid, I don't think, is this a scandal? Because I don't know that the costume itself is the problem. For me, I don't see that. And I certainly could understand where a group full of, you know, marketing people is like, well, this is just, I don't know, it's just like a... Now, when you have, when you see this image, though, it's impossible to me to think someone didn't see that and say, like, I don't know about that. Unless everybody in the room is white, everybody in the room is under 30 and doesn't know jack about the history of, like, a minstrel show, Jim Crow. Like, that is where you get the question, you say, is Target racist? For me, no, no. Are there some structural issues in their hiring? Maybe. Part of my, and again, I'm making stuff up because who knows? Target's never going to tell us what the deal is. To me, you know what this looks like? AI. My guess is there wasn't ever a photo shoot. My guess is there were never a bunch of people in a room to say yes or no on that costume. My guess is that in this world where every company is expecting people to do more and more and more with less and less and less, I just wonder, was this an AI? You know, you go into the thing, you're like, here's the costume, make an image, and AI made that image, and somebody, some programmer just put it up, and that was that. I do think these are part, and I guess part of me thinks it's more reasonable to think that AI is racist than thinking Target Corporation is racist.
It's certainly a possibility.
But is that costume to you, if you didn't see it?
Well, the trouble is, even if you put a white kid in that costume, like the way that you're putting up against the other picture,
well,
right
in
now
this
online,
image, right, the image that's been circulating that people have probably seen on Instagram,
then even with a white kid in it, I no, that's a no.
You
me.
Would never make that association. You would just say that's a weird costume.
I wouldn't make that association.
Right.
But it's entirely possible that one of my black brothers and sisters
maybe
would still make that association with that. And if they did, and they, you know, said something about it, then yeah, then immediately Target
of
has to
course,
take that down.
Of course. And I think they would.
So
right?
I think, but I think to your point, it's the combo platter, right? It's the fact that you have that costume, which is perhaps mildly problematic, but as soon as you put a black kid in it, it becomes really
yes,
problematic.
Absolutely.
But it may still be a problem all on its own.
Maybe.
Either way, that picture can't be put out there for a major corporation. It just can't. And whether it's AI, like you say, which, this brings up a whole other topic, right, about people double-checking AI's work because nobody seems to want to do that anymore,
right,
even though we know AI does stupid stuff all the time. But everybody just thinks you can AI something and then just put it out there without actually, you know, I don't know, double-checking or
right,
fact-checking
right,
or taking a look at it. But to your bigger point, any corporation has leaks, right? I mean, when you're dealing with a bureaucracy, when you're dealing with a structured hierarchy, stuff slips through the cracks. That happens all the time. But one of the things you do as a corporation to try and do that is make sure you have different perspectives and different voices and different lived experiences looking at different things
yeah,
to try and
yeah,
minimize that as much as possible. And given what Target has just announced what a year and a half ago about rolling back DEI initiatives, you do have to wonder, do they have the right people in the right spots?
And I think that's
with
fair,
the right eyeball. I think that's
and
actually
that's
a fair
the
to question.
Question.
Yeah.
And I do think, and like, I get it. Like, Shaletta's passion on this issue goes deeper than this one incident. This goes back to rolling back DEI. This goes back to whether or not Target made its lived up to its commitment after the murder of George Floyd to invest in black-owned media organizations, of which Shaletta owns one. And so I do not blame her for her emotional reaction on this. And maybe she's right. I don't know. To me, the real question is, how are things like this getting approved? Do you have enough levels of approval? And at a certain point, you got to look around the room. And I know in this focus on diversity, the focus has been on racial diversity. And a company like Target, if you think Target is made up of a bunch of right-wing people that are racist, I would invite you to go visit Target headquarters, because Target is made up of 20 to 35-year-old urban-dwelling Minneapolis residents. Like, let's be serious. I do think there's a youth problem, that you need some people with a wider lens of history, maybe. Now, Joe says, look at the smile on the costume mask. Compare it to magazine articles from the 1890s where black folks are portrayed as monkeys. And then get back to us with the Jason take. And I would say, if you are looking for that comparison, yeah, yes. Is it? Now, I personally just think it's a dumb costume. Like, I don't understand why you're... But you're trying to make a one, you know, you can see where a designer is like, all right, I'm trying to make an easy costume. It's Target. You can show up. The kid just puts it on. It's a full costume. Oh, it's like the mask is right in the shirt. Oh, and so to make that mask stay, maybe you got to do this big old smile. That's funny.
It's the combo of the smile and the little hat. That's the big problem.
If you get a room full of under 30 white and black people, do they know? Do they have that visceral reaction? I think part
white people under 30, I wouldn't think so. No, I can't speak to what a black person under 30. I don't know what their lived experience would be. That's what I'm saying. I mean, yeah. They could be brought up in a way that they
know. We have this idea that if you get more black people in the room, then that's going to solve this problem. I don't know that that's true. I think our focus on diversity, on only being about race, you need some older people in the room. You need some right wingers. You need some left wingers. And for God's sake, Target, you need, like, at the network news, you have a standards and practices division that before any script gets approved, it goes through them. At Target, isn't there somebody looking at this stuff? And maybe someone looked at the drawing and said, yeah, that costume looks fine. Texter says, look at it without race. That's how most of us minorities think about it. Just have fun and quit listening to the small, loud minority that's offended about everything. I don't think this is that case. Target admitted that it was offensive. It is offensive. You look at that kid in that costume. And why would you sell a costume that would look offensive if black kids are wearing it? What are you doing? I don't know. It's just disappointing. Disappointing. Keep your thoughts coming. 651-461-9226. Twins Ticket Tuesday. We're giving away free tickets. Have some fun this weekend at the Twins game Saturday night. Listen for the sounder and be caller 3 on CCO. It just makes you smile, doesn't it? 925. How many people are going to go back and watch that movie again over the next couple of days? I wonder how it holds up. I don't know. We're talking about Target. And by the way, if you haven't heard Adam and Jordana's conversation with Randy Weingarten, the head of the teachers union, on the topic we talked about yesterday, all of that available on podcast. So you can find that interview at the Adam and Jordana podcast. You can find our conversation from yesterday about the teachers union boycott, which I spoke out strongly against, immediately to be followed up with this story about Target and the costume. I gave a full-throated defense, Dan, saying how I think the teachers union protesting Target for not speaking out against ICE was ridiculous. You can find that in the YouTube channel under videos. You can find that in the Drive Time with Tarusha podcast as well. Lots of text coming in on Target's latest embarrassment, unforced error, I would say, where freaking out about Target being racist to me isn't the question. The question is, are the people running this company, are they living in 2026? Do they understand that the world we're in, if you put one product on your shelf that is offensive, you are going to get blasted for it? If you made that product, then you're going to get deservedly blasted for it. And I do think the criticism of Target, while for me is, you know, this is our world we're in right now. You always take things 7 or 8 steps beyond in your criticism. I do think they deserve the heat for this. Because how do you approve this? Texters, do we know where this design came from? Was it from the U.S. or was it maybe from China that's on the employees in that committee who is in charge of that selection? It was a Target-owned brand, but we don't know. I don't know where their designers are, and that's a fair question. Another texter, Target's majority non-Caucasian. I don't know if that's true. I mean, maybe Target is a corporation if you're counting every person working in every one of these 2,000 stores around the country. But the design, come on. Like, I work downtown Minneapolis. I can pick out a Target employee from 3 blocks away. And they are not majority non-Caucasian. Dumb Target. Kids looks like a small Al Jolson in pose and hat. Poor underwriting, says a texter. Another texter says, I'm 28. I'm white. And I have no idea what you're talking about with the problem with this. I do understand blackface is not okay. So I would say, like, and I've seen some criticism of this costume, Dan, where people have been saying, like, it's sort of like blackface. To me, that's not it. It's that it's this minstrel show.
Yeah.
Bit. Like, it's,
if the rest of the costume, say neck down, was pure orange or various shades of orange or different. If the, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Black is the dominant color of the entire costume. So if it was just the hood that was black with the teeth and the hat, then yeah, then blackface, I think, could be a thing.
Yeah.
But given that it's predominant color of the entire,
you have a lot of
costume,
orange and a lot of black.
Yeah,
and it's
I don't necessarily see that.
The gloves.
Like you say, that especially
hat.
With the pose.
It's the pose.
I mean,
that's why I think it's AI. That I think you put this costume into AI, and instead of a photo shoot with a model and a bit, I don't know. I could be wrong. Let's go to Jonathan. Who's at 651-461-9226. Jonathan, what do you make of all this?
Pooey kapooey.
Oh, say that again, Dan. Because it sounded like it was good, but we didn't have you punched.
I was so proud of having his theme ready to go, I actually forgot to put him on the air. It was the only problem.
It's a bunch of hooey kapooey. No. No. No.
All right, tell me more. Why do you think it's hooey kapooey?
Okay, first off, when I was growing up, in my generation, the only two costumes that we ever had from Target or from Walmart was Six Sexy Kitty or Serial Killer.
Yeah.
So stop making a big deal out of freaking everything. I'm so over it. Let kids be kids. Let parents go out and dress up with whatever the heck they want to do. Eat the candy that your mom told you you're not supposed to eat until they inspect it, because you know you're going to sit there and eat the whole bag of candy that your kids are going to get.
You don't think Target deserves any criticism for this costume?
You know, okay, I love Shaletta.
Me
and
too.
Please don't yell at me, Shaletta, because we're friends and I've seen her at Beyonce. And I can tell you, she might be overreacting just a tad bit. And being over the age of 57, I can tell you, there are more things to worry about than kids' costumes.
Hmm.
Walking down the street, going for coffee with your friends. Believe me, I don't know what to say on this topic, but I can tell you right now, you're not going to get me to wear that ugly-ass costume. I'm sorry.
It actually is an interesting point. Jonathan, I thank you for calling it. I thank you for making that point. So look. Everything ends up being at about the same volume level, right? If it's a minor problem, if it's this frustrates me because it indicates what we've been talking about before. I think that's why this is an issue for Target. Jonathan is right. One costume, look, Target sells hundreds of thousands of things. Who cares? But it's because it is indicative of this sense that people have had. And I've pushed back on it, but it's a sense that as a company, Target has turned its back on what it said it believed in. And it's leaving black people and gay people behind. And while I don't agree with that narrative, when you do something like this, it does make you think, gosh, maybe there is a point. Maybe they do have a point on this. And then you analyze it and you're like, well, that's probably not quite how this came about. But as a company, what you need to do is protect yourself from these things. Target ran into all sorts of problems because they put one bathing suit as part of their Gay Pride collection. One item. And they know the danger. And there's a lot of people over there working on it. Let's break. Let's talk about the State Fair. Coming up, today's Tuesday. We're 2 days away. And there is a family that has an opportunity I think a lot of us would dream of. The chance to open a new venue at the State Fairgrounds. I don't know how they had 10 minutes to talk to us 2 days before the State Fair, but we're going to talk with one of the new vendors in just a minute right here on Drive Time. It is crunch time for the Minnesota State Fair. For a lot of us, we're remembering to go online or go to Cub and buy our discount tickets before we get out to the State Fair. But to Joe and Alyssa Zimmerly, this is really crunch time to get that booth fully ready, get the staff fully trained, because they have a brand new location, a brand new building. It is called Summer Lakes Beverage is the name of their company. But the Summer Lakes Boathouse is a new part of the State Fair. And Joe and Alyssa join us live from the fair. I see the giant Ferris wheel in the background, and they're with us on our YouTube. What a great shot, Joe. You could be hired to do TV work here. This is very nice.
I'm going to give the credit to her. She's like, make sure you get this in the background. I just execute. That's all I do.
We just got that up yesterday.
Alyssa, tell us how things are going. The fair starts in 2 days, and not just a brand new menu and a brand new experience at the fair, but you have a literal new building as well, right?
We do. Things are going great. It's kind of crunch time right now. It's very hustle bustle on the fairgrounds. There's cars and trucks and vans and semis bringing everything in, and we are so excited. So we're not brand new to the fair. We've actually been in the fair for about 5 years, but this is a new spot for us with a new building, a new menu, live music, all the things. We're very, very excited.
Tell us how you got accepted and how you got this opportunity to expand your presence, because originally you were really just doing drinks, right?
Yeah. We were a 20 by 20 tent kind of a thing. So this is a big jump. Yeah, for sure, Jason. It's been really cool. Big process here. You have to work for it. I will put it that way. Short and sweet. Lots of proposals kind of thing going on. We had to put together architecture drawings and the whole bit. Concept menu, concept theme, do your homework and prove yourself. That is the recipe for success in getting to where we are today, for sure.
What is the vision, Alyssa, of this new venue, because of the beach house? Or the boat? I'm sorry, it's the boathouse, right? The boathouse.
The boathouse. So we are in Minnesota, and the best things about Minnesota are summer and the lakes. So we are full of lake vibes at the Summer Lakes Boathouse. We want people to come and enjoy and eat good food and listen to good music and drink good drinks and just live the lake life at the State Fair.
Makes sense, right? When you think about Minnesota, the lake life is part of our summer experience that never really has been celebrated at the State Fair.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we love the concept. The building is gorgeous. Come and enjoy and relax and live that lake life with us.
All right, how did you guys meet? What is your Minnesota story, Joe and Alyssa?
Alyssa and I met like every hardworking couple maybe at work. I was a sous chef in the kitchen, not quite executive. So this is back in the day. We are celebrating the big 2-0, 20 years together.
Wow.
Wonderful marriage. Thank you for that.
Congrats.
Yeah, we met at Jack's Cafe in Northeast Minneapolis. Alyssa was front of house. I was back of the house. And yeah, it's been, you know, just we love to entertain people. We always have. So we connected right away on that. We love to travel. We love Minnesota. We love lake life. And then, you know, when we decided to move forward with this whole venture and put our hat in, we knew it was something we wanted to do together. And that's important.
A little cliche, Alyssa, being the front of house person attracted to the sexy cook in the back of house, right?
Yeah, feels maybe a little the other way around, but, you know.
you made the move? Who made the first move there?
That was this guy right here for sure.
No, he had a way with a steak. I mean,
well, and he can cook,
right? So mm-hmm. Jack's Cafe is an absolute legend. What a what a great spot to have the foundation of your story. You think of how many love stories have been celebrated at that place. I have a fair number of matchbooks commemorating different occasions at Jack's. And for you guys, what's it mean to be sort of graduating to this next level at the Minnesota State Fair?
It feels amazing. I think it's really a dream come true for us. When we started our company, I said, I want to be in the State Fair. And that was just something that we didn't know if it would happen. And then it did. And then we just have kept growing since then. And I tell you, the people at the State Fair are special people. We have been welcomed with open arms. People have been willing to help and, you know, talk us through things and offer advice. And it has just been a really wonderful experience so far.
You had to figure out a menu, right? Because the original, and we just showed on our live stream, the original, like, little tent, the beverage operation. Mm-hmm. And you were known for, like, your bootlegs and your cocktail mixes and your NA mixes and different things like that. But when it came time to figure out, like, all right, what are we going to put on a food menu? How does that go? Do you have to get it all approved by the fair? Did you guys test this out in the off season? How do you even begin that sort of process?
Great question. Short answer again is yes. The State Fair, you know, approval may be a stretch of the term, but it's all based into the concept that it's all kind of baked in, no pun intended, to the concept that you're proposing to the State Fair. And there's a number of factors, as you can imagine, that gets you into an experience like this. But the menu, what you're going to prepare and different dishes and things like that, that all goes into it as well. And Alyssa and I, honestly, we just, you know, took a step back, did some homework, obviously, see what's here. And the way that we've always enjoyed the fair, longtime fair goers, is shareable, small bites. We want to try lots of stuff. It's not necessarily one site. And that's what makes this fair the best on earth. There are so many great vendors out here. So, you know, foods that are shareable, foods that are fresh, getting back to our roots, all natural, real ingredients, no fake flavorings. This is real food, and we're sticking by that kind of a deal. So, you know, keep it small, shareable, you know, goes good with the drink, obviously. That kind of thing was really the premise of what we wanted to base our menu design on, as well as the building and the overall concept as well.
You do have an official new food, which is sort of funny, right? Because everything at at your Summer Lakes Boathouse, it's all new. But tell me about the official new food that you guys have.
Yeah, I mean, a little irony there, right? Agreed. I didn't really realize what the process is of getting a new food on the fairgrounds actually is, but it's a bigger deal than just throwing some new food in front of people that want to come and check out your spot.
Right.
Go figure.
Right.
You want to talk me through it?
Yeah. So Dockside Poppers is our official new food. Seasoned cream cheese, bacon in there, artichoke hearts, jalapeno peppers. We combine all of that together. We bread it. We deep fry it lightly. Comes with a homemade tomato chili jam for dipping. And again, it just really fits into that shareable item where you can buy an order of it and share with a lot of people. And you just have, we like to do a little of a lot is how we like to do things. So just a little nibble.
Where are people going to find you? Where are you going to be?
Big giant Ferris wheel. That's the best landmark. right there. It's the biggest one in the country. It's new. It's bigger this year. We're on Underwood and Randall. That's the intersection. But for those of us that don't pay attention to streets, yeah. Look for this guy.
Mm-hmm. And for the big lighthouse.
Yeah,
the lighthouse on the top of our building. So yep. That'll shine and bring you here, too.
I mean, I think part, as we talk with Joe and Alyssa Zimmerly, part of what people don't necessarily know about this process is that you have a fair amount of skin in the game here, right, to make sure that this works. The cost, it's not like the fair is building this building, right? Can you guys talk about that a little bit?
Oh, absolutely. This is a commitment. And again, I believe it's what makes this fair so good. This is a family out here. You're in it for the long run. The way that they allow new vendors into this place is, you know, it's difficult to get in, but for good reason. And they're doing a really good job at variety and packing in, you know, different things each year that are new and interesting and that kind of thing. And so, you know, definitely put your skin in the game is exactly how to phrase it. It's a commitment. That
I mean, this had to cut this building and the construction of this. I mean, to say if I said $1 million, is that a crazy amount of money?
It seems like a crazy amount of money until you step back and see how much things cost.
Right.
You learn real quick. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean,
maybe not so much.
Yeah. I remember talking to Pat Mancini when he built his building.
Sure.
And he was nervous. He's like, I don't like this. I mean, getting in the seven figures is not that far off. And maybe it is on the low end, depending on what the structure is. And it takes a couple of years. You know, it may take 5 years to build it back, to get that money back. You just don't know. And it has to be successful. People have to like the food, too. Right.
Yeah, you have to want to be here. You want to make a commitment. You want to, we get to be here. That's really what this is all about. We feel honored. This is a dream come true for us, and we are all in. This is a decision that we made. And of course, you're talking, it's like, you know, a year and a half ago, these were the conversations we were having together. And when you open up a new business, you know, you get used to taking some risks. This is a big one. This is a big jump. We've been here before. And we feel like it's the right move. You know, nothing's guaranteed in this world, and you just have to go for it if it's what you really want, what you believe in, and this is one of those things for us.
I'm cheering for you guys. You are delightful, and Summer Lakes Beverage has been a hit for a number of years out at the fair, and people can find it at liquor stores and grocery stores, too. But check them out, the Boathouse at the State Fair, Alyssa and Joe Zimmerly. We'll see you guys on Thursday.
Yeah. Thank you, Jason.
Pretty fun.
Can't wait to see you.
Have a good one.
All right. First day of the fair. We'll be out there. We'll be eating all the new foods and doing our best to not throw up. That's the plan. Day one. That's everybody's plan for sure. That's Tarasha Eats. Drive Time back in just a minute. Dolly Parton recorded that song twice before Whitney Houston made it an even bigger hit, The Bodyguard. One of the interesting nuggets I've read about Dolly Parton after learning of her death earlier this afternoon is something that I think a lot of us don't realize about big music stars is they end up writing so many songs for other musicians. And for sure for our younger listeners, like Dolly's duets with younger artists have been maybe the way they know her songs. But I Will Always Love You, that's been sort of the refrain of the images that her family has put out and her message to all of us.
So many connections you can draw between Dolly and other artists, whether it's she wrote songs for them or, remember, there's plenty of people that wrote songs for her. The Islands in the Stream, which we played earlier.
Yeah.
Remember, that was the Bee Gees wrote
Bee Gees.
That song.
All the Bee Gees, so, the Gibbs.
I mean, it's just she's just connected to everybody. I mean, you talk about 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Forget that. Yeah. It's like 3 degrees of Dolly.
I was in Nashville and we went to see the Opry and the original Opry. And part of the tour, you read like how Dolly, how invested she was in the next generation of country, especially country women. Pretty cool stuff. People sending in their favorite songs. We'll play them for you. Text them in at 651-461-9226. You want to share a memory? You can send us a voice message too on the Odyssey app. Lots more show coming up. Continental Diamond, we thank them for their support. They're part of a celebrity wedding this past weekend. Did you see that? The Taylor Heisey And now Fox, does she change her name? I don't know. But they went to Continental Diamond for that beautiful gemstone. So I had some thoughts as to what we should talk about here. But I'm wondering if on a day when so many of us are enjoying our favorite Dolly Parton songs, connecting with the memory and the importance that she had, should we just do like, give me your favorite Dolly Parton song, 651-461-9226, and then Dan will play it. Don't give me that look. You can do it. You can do it. Dan's like, what are you doing to me? What if I don't have it? Well, what if you do have it? Let's. We've played I Will Always Love You. Texts are coming in at 651-461-9226. Islands in the Stream with Kenny Rogers. Can you play Islands in the Stream with Kenny Rogers? One of her biggest hits was that duet. They actually toured because that song was so hot, written by the Bee Gees. This is August 1983. And this, when I think Dolly Parton, I am 8 years old in Des Plaines, Illinois. My dad has taken my mom's favorite Dolly Parton songs and recorded them on a VHS tape so she could just press play on that and have that music running through her house. And I hear, when I connect with childhood, I hear this.
Islands in the Stream, that is what we are. No one in between. How can we be wrong? Sail away with me to another world. And we rely on each other. From one lover to another.
Now, I thought it was Islands in the Street, which made no sense. Like, you know, Mom, I don't even get it. Why is there an island in the middle of the street? She's like, stream. I'm like, well, that's your opinion. I don't know. Texter says, Jolene. Jolene. How big was that song? And I saw Miley Cyrus perform Jolene live at the former XL Energy Center. This song goes back. This is a 52-year-old song, the initial version.
Jolene, 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 Jolene.
Mm.
Jolene, Jolene, Jolene. I'm begging of you, please don't take my man. Jolene.
Olivia
Jolene,
Newton-John, Jolene, The White Stripes, Jolene. Miley. Pentatonix won a Grammy with this song. Beyonce, remember the Beyonce version of this song? Change the lyrics, change the production. But this is like OG, early Dolly Parton. Texter's coming in. Yeah, that Dolly and Miley Cyrus Jolene duet was special. Texter says it's 5:15. And we all just got done working. So you know what song you have to play from the Dolly Parton canon.
Working 9 to 5. What a way to make a living. Heavy getting by. It's all taking and no giving. They just use your mind. And they never give you credit. It's enough to drive you crazy if you let it. 9 to 5.
So good. So good. There's no doubt that, you know, all the think pieces are going to come out over the next couple days, right? How, and I can already imagine all these headlines, and they've probably are, people have already been squirting them out of themselves like this afternoon, right? Dolly Parton, feminist icon. Dolly Parton, unifier. Dolly Parton, philanthropist. And the philanthropy, to me, is where I really feel like part of the love for her is that, one, she was so accessible so early. To have a star in that era talking about getting a boob job and talking about having fake fingernails and talking about fake blonde. It just wasn't done. It was so disarming, right? And today's celebrities do an absolute, like, low-rent imitation of that, where you try to let your fans in on you, who you really are. No, that Dolly was just letting it rip like that, which was just shocking at the time. Who talked about having a boob job in the 80s? Nobody. Now, Andrew pointing out that the tickets for the new Dolly Broadway show are going to sell out in a second. The magic, and there are certain people that you know that they're in on the joke. Dolly Parton played the role of the dumb blonde because she was not dumb. She was playing that role. She knew what she was doing. She was the flamboyant, out there person who also had been with her husband for almost 60 years before he died last year. I don't know. It's pretty cool stuff. I'm saying that all these think pieces are going to come out, and also I'm going to read them all. Because I don't know about you guys, but don't you hunger for that type of person where you're like, Dolly Parton donated $1 million in the early days of COVID to Vanderbilt University to develop a COVID vaccine to help in that search. Well, I mean, it's amazing. Hundreds of millions of free books have been distributed all over Minnesota, all over America, all over the world because of her nonprofit. I mean, this is what we should all be doing. We, not all of us can start a nonprofit. Not all of us can donate $1 million to develop some life-saving technology. But you can do something. You can do something outside of yourself to make the world better. And that's, I think that's part of it. Let's break. In a minute, I want to spend a little bit of time on inconsequential grievances. I feel like if you were following my social media today, before the news of Dolly Parton's death, today I was engaging in my favorite type of complaint, low stakes. So I may sound like I'm at an 11 on these issues, but it's about a 2. It's the fun stuff. We'll do that when we come back. Playing Dolly Parton songs throughout the show today. In our first hour, we had a conversation with a country music radio Hall of Famer who told a really touching story about the time she met Dolly Parton. And that is available on podcast. So wherever you get podcasts, just search Drive Time with DeRussia. We'd love it if you give us a subscription there. You just click follow and it'll download all our updates for you. And you don't even really need to listen to them. If you just click on them every once in a while, it would make the data look really good for us. So that would be fine. Is that fine, Dan? I don't know how this all works.
I don't either. So, yeah. If that
just
that,
click it.
That clicks the clicker and gets the numbers to the right people.
You can turn the audio off. You don't really need to listen. On Facebook, Tina says her favorite Dolly Parton song is A Coat of Many Colors. May she rest in peace, a beautiful woman. Tina.
My coat of many colors that my mama made for me, made only from rags, but I wore it so proudly. Although we had no money, well, I was rich as I could be. In my coat of many colors my mama made for me.
Pretty cool. That's actually a really powerful song. If you listen to the lyrics, good stuff. All right, low stakes arguments. This morning I get an email, and in the Enough segment on Wednesdays, Dan, one of the common things that people will say they've had enough of is the request for feedback. We live in a country that corporate America is constantly asking for us to fill out a survey and share our feedback. And they couldn't give two craps about your feedback, is sort of the vibe I get. The one that makes me laugh the most is Caribou Coffee. And I love Caribou Coffee. Mm-hmm. I love you guys. The other day, their light roast at Caribou, and I just like coffee. I go to Caribou Coffee and get coffee. They make their money on everybody getting the, you know, foam.
Caramel high rise is my order, yeah.
Yeah, they're making money off you.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're making money off me, you know?
Just not as much.
Not as much, right. Yeah. I'm paying $3.50, but they had the La Minita Peaberry, I think.
Excuse me?
For the light roast.
Do I have to hit the dump button?
It's delicious. Before the cup of coffee was handed to me, I had an email asking to rate my experience. I don't even know yet.
Yeah. Let me finish the coffee first.
Can't the computer geniuses at Caribou, like, build in a two-minute delay? Right? Like, I get it. They ring it up. Boom. It's linked to my rewards number or whatever.
Yeah, but there should still be a way to set
a little
timer
delay
on it. Yeah.
Anyway, so today, today I got what I would say is the most laughable request for a survey, and it came from Sun Country. Here's what the email said. We're always looking for ways to make travel feel easier, from planning the trip to settling into your seat. This 30-minute survey is powered by our research partner, LEK. But it's really about learning more from you, how you travel, what you value, and what would make the experience better. So at this point, I'm looking, I'm like, do I get a free flight?
Where's the $100 flight voucher? Yeah.
I mean, what am I getting for being your...
Remember those days? Remember the salad days when companies would actually offer you a little spiff for filling out the survey? That's gone.
Nothing. Your feedback will help shape what comes next. Thanks for taking the time to share it.
No.
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 You're welcome.
For nothing.
I'm not doing it. I believe it should be illegal. Punishable by, I don't know, public stoning, perhaps.
Oh, you know who?
But you shouldn't be able to, corporate America should not be able to send out a survey that doesn't include payment.
This sounds like a Senator Klobuchar issue. Doesn't this? I mean, that's right in her wheelhouse.
Oh, we should make a top 10 Amy Klobuchar for governor issues. Banning surveys.
Yep.
Banning questions at the gas pump when the temperature is below 20 degrees.
Perfect.
Right?
Yeah.
If you ask, do you want a car wash when it's sub-zero, we're going to yank a pump out of the ground.
Yeah. Speaking of car wash, that's what I thought of when you started talking about surveys, because where I used to enjoy the survey was you were kind enough to buy me a car wash subscription. So every time I'd go to the car wash, you'd get a survey.
Yes, I got
survey text. And I used to really enjoy that, because I knew it got to you because you would then screenshot it and send it to me like, hey, did you enjoy your car wash?
Right.
And I knew that's how I knew it bugged you. And now the other day I go to the car wash and now I'm getting them.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want that. It's supposed to go to you. Why is it coming to me?
The one that annoys me the most is from the garbage company, from WM, formerly Waste Management. You just picked up my trash can. Like, I have no feedback to share.
Another Senator Klobuchar issue is the backup beeping of the Waste Management trucks that goes on for 20 minutes. You know, 4 or 5 beeps is enough.
Yeah.
If you don't, you know, get out of the way in 4 or 5 beats, I'm sorry, that's on you.
I started to fill out a survey once for Lunds and Byerly's because I really liked the people that work there. And I was like, I want to send that feedback. And so I started filling out the survey.
And guess what that got you?
Well, then it asked for another question.
Yeah, it did.
And then another page. Yep. And you keep answering and they're like, could you expand on that?
Yeah.
Like, no! You get like a text box That's the newest game on these things. You start filling out, and it's like, not enough words. Like, screw you, not enough words. All right, we're going to break. In a minute.
Maybe that's what you do next time, is just like in all caps, just tell them why their surveys are dumb.
Survey.
Yeah.
It's just so upsetting. All right, we're going to break in a minute. This week, rightly so, Minnesota is refocusing on the horrors that happened on August 27th at Annunciation Church and School. But for the families who had students in that church, they never had the luxury of changing the topic or turning their focus away. The Minnesota Star Tribune masterfully shared four families' video diaries. And the video journalist who paved the way and started those conversations to build the trust to tell those stories is going to join us in just a minute. If you haven't seen this yet at StarTribune.com, it's worth subscribing to the Star Tribune to see this project alone. It is that powerful and it's that important. We'll talk the video journalist in just a minute.
Hi.
Hi.
You want to introduce yourselves?
Hi.
What's your name?
My name's Willem.
Okay, what grade are you in?
I'm in third grade, and I go to Annunciation School.
And you are?
My name's Elota. I'm in fifth grade. I go to Annunciation School, too.
And I'm Sarah Slack, and I also go to Annunciation
Catholic
School.
You teach.
I'm a first grade teacher at Annunciation.
Such innocence. And that video starts what for me was an absolutely emotional, heart-wrenching, gutting, inspiring, all of the emotions from this video project, this reporting project at the Minnesota Star Tribune. It was called The Annunciation Diaries. And video journalist Amanda Anderson is with us via live video hookup. If you're watching on our live stream on YouTube, Amanda, this for me to consume was incredibly emotional. I cannot even begin, first of all, to thank you for the gift that you have given to all of us of access and of a glimpse inside what must have been the most hellish year of these families' lives.
I think you're right. Yeah, this was a mixture of emotions for all of us. I mean, especially these families that were so gracious in participating in this project and really helping us see glimpses into the highs and the lows, the inspiring moments, the tearful, sad moments, all of it.
August 27th is how the families refer to that moment. For you, and I know as a journalist, you're telling their stories, but to me, you're part of this story as well, Amanda, because you were out on the scene when this happened, right?
Yeah, I was one of the many, many, many journalists that responded on August 27th, and it never feels great, as you would imagine, to respond to events like these. And I remember talking to a gentleman that was there paying his respects, and he said, you know, the real story happens when all of these big cameras are gone, when all the national media is gone. And I mean, he was right. And a lot of people said they didn't want their stories forgotten and they didn't want to just be statistics. And so I remember thinking, as local media, as the Minnesota Star Tribune, the asset that we have that's different than all these big platforms is we have time. We had time to sit with people in their grief, and we had time to sit with people in the highs and the lows and really be partners in reporting. And being on this collaborative journey together. I mean, it was the people that submitted these video diaries working with me. Just, I mean, they were filming just as much as I was, if not more, and letting us into these very intimate moments, driving at home, at school, on spring break. at Great Wolf Lodge. So it was just so nice to be on this journey with the people and having them let me into their lives in these ways.
It's super emotional because, so, you know, I spent 20 years as a journalist before I came into talk radio, and I've been to these sorts of scenes before, but I'm also a dad. And when you see these little kids, because they're so young, and you see them like at Great Wolf Lodge, like trying to have some normal moments, or skiing, trying after they were in that church when that was happening. And you have to move forward, but how do you get out of sort of living in that pain? And I think like Sarah Slack, really, her story as a teacher, as she's trying to, she brings in the bunny into the classroom to try to have some joy. And that final scene of the pea-themed party.
Yeah, their first grade family feast. Yeah, such a moment.
I mean, I was a puddle of tears at the end of that. I want to play this scene with 10-year-old Wes and his mom, Katie. And Wes is going in, I think it's his backyard. Were you there shooting this moment when they went out to the set the scene of what's going on here?
So I believe you're about to play the scene where we see the tree that he planted to honor Harper Moisky and Fletcher Merkel. And Katie Simpson, his mother, very intentionally set up Fridays as Friday Fun Day so that he was close with his friends and he was very social and he is a very active kid. And that the bond between his friends and his need to be with them and be doing activities and just being together only grew after August 27th. And so she planned these Friday fun events. And I went over on a Friday right before they were going off somewhere. So Weston was like antsy to get going to where they were going. I can't remember. I think they were going to the beach that day. But I really wanted to see the tree that he planted. And so we were chatting inside for a little bit. And then he was all excited to go talk about his tree so that he could eventually get to Friday fun. But I believe that is the clip we're about to see.
That is it. Let's take a listen.
My tree. It's pretty good.
Why did we plant it, Wes?
For exhibition.
And?
I wanted to plant the tree to remember Harper and Fletcher.
I think about Harper and Fletcher every single day, and I look for them in nature. I look for signs from Harper and Fletcher. I've seen so many rainbows.
Yeah.
The emotion of a kid who planted a tree for these two kids who are gone, and seeing the growth of that tree.
He talked about how he noticed it had grown from here to here and how it wasn't as tall as him when they planted it. And now it was maybe 6 inches taller, but still taller than him.
It's so powerful. For you, these moments, what was it like to be there with these families as they went on, you know, the highs and lows of like trying to get legislation done? That was a key part of this storytelling. And also, though, trying to take care of their families, even when you have someone who is, and any parent who's lost a child. Oh, the way the world works is the parents are supposed to die first. The child is not supposed to die first. Mm. But you also often have other children. So you have to keep moving. You have to keep moving. I just wondered kind of what are the things that really jumped out to you, Amanda?
There were many moments that were punches to the gut. One was a moment at the end where you hear Jackie Flavin, Harper Moisky's mother, read this piece that she had written. And she talked about waiting in the carpool line to pick up her daughter at the end of school. And there were moments when she was speaking this that we all could relate to. You can relate to having that moment where you think you see someone familiar and you're like, oh,
let's
that,
play, let's
that can't
play
be.
That.
That's, Yes. Yeah. I pulled
that moment too, Amanda. You and I have the same sense, right?
I'm getting ahead of you. I'm so sorry.
No,
Jason.
No, it's very good. We didn't say what I was going to pull, but you're landing right on the moments that for me were the gut punch. And this moment of a mom, Jackie Flavin, who lost Harper in this shooting, one of the two kids killed, is really heartbreaking.
Every afternoon, I sit in the carpool line directly in front of the church where the shooter parked the day we lost Harper. 8 months later, this is just part of our routine now. Quinn likes me to get there early because she doesn't want to stand outside waiting after school. So every day, I line up early and wait there, staring at the church. Then the line starts moving, and I drive past the fifth graders doing safety patrol. Harper was excited to someday do safety patrol. Then I scan the crowd looking for Quinn, and almost every day, for one split second, I think I see Harper standing there too. Then reality catches up, and I remind myself I'm only picking up Quinn. And immediately after that comes this overwhelming wave of gratitude, because how lucky am I that I still get to pick up Quinn? That's the strange thing about grief, that devastation and the gratitude live right on top of each other.
I mean, that's everything, Amanda.
Yeah, and there's so many moments in there where I had to pause and reflect, thinking about recognizing someone. We all can relate to that feeling. Or thinking, I remember for me personally, being in fifth grade and being so excited to do safety patrol. It was the coolest thing. So I just wasn't expecting to relate in these very small but powerful ways that help you feel connected, where help to the human experience.
Amanda Anderson is a video journalist, part of the effort that involved a number. I mean, the web interface, the way they built this, it's just like, you're like, only the Star Tribune could do this. I mean, the amount of resources it took to tell this story. When you look at it in totality, obviously, the families were trying to get some gun control legislation passed. They got out of one house. It never was brought up for a vote again, although that's disputed as to whether or not it was, you know, there was a committee that voted it down. But either way, to me, the legislative battle was interesting, but it was the human side of this that is going to stick with me. How about you?
Oh, for sure. We're natural storytellers, and we connect to one another based on the stories that we tell. And so while it's interesting to follow the politics, that's a part of the journey. I was just along for the ride on these particular families' journeys. And that was one that became very important for a lot of these families. And I, again, was very lucky to be included in their regular Monday evening meetings, and being privy to when they were doing the desk installation at the Capitol. And I think that those moments when you're seeing the heart of why people are the way they are and choose to fight for the things they fight for, make it compelling.
Yeah, that weekly meeting at Red Wagon Pizza in South Minneapolis.
Yeah. It was they were long meetings, but it was just so interesting. I think I probably went to six meetings and they were a couple hours long, and just listening to the footage of this group developing over time and the intentionality that they had with their messaging and how they wanted to reach people. And it's a marathon, not a sprint sort of situation.
Right.
And realizing that from the jump, knowing that it was going to be
a journey. Yeah.
Yeah.
As will be their emotional recovery for this. If you ever recover, you just keep moving. That's all you can do. Amanda Anderson, excellent work. Really touched me. And thank you and the team. I know how overwhelming it can be also just for a journalist to look through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of video diary to try to put together this story. It was tremendous. Thanks, Amanda.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Jason.
You can check it out, StarTribune.com, The Annunciation Diaries. This week, as you hear remembrances, hear from the families, and you can do it through that project. We'll be back. Drive Time, wrap it up in just a minute. There's something that just all of these songs just make me smile. Such a voice, that sound transports you back. Dolly Parton, dead at the age of 80. The interaction on Instagram and Facebook on my video that I posted has been tremendous. So keep it coming if you want to share your thoughts, your favorite songs. Just search DeRussia on social media, and I'm reading all of it. So appreciate that. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to talk about Reply All. Reply All. Because if I ran this company, I would go into the Outlook settings and remove the Reply All button. Is that possible? Is that a tech?
It would be difficult since we don't use Outlook, but you could give it a try.
I mean, Google, could you do it in the Google workplace? This is such an Android response from this nerd.
Well, actually,
it's going to be a nice tease for tomorrow's show, Cook. Continental Diamond would appreciate more deference to my work. The Continental Diamond, Type Check 557.